Okay, let's get going. Welcome everybody, students and guests, on a rainy day. Anybody have any questions or observations or feelings about any past lectures? Because it's a terrible thing to hold in all these feelings, you know. So if you have something that you really want to talk about, now's the time. A couple things. We got three lectures left, today's and next week. Want to remind everybody that the team presentations are on Tuesday, March 8th, so that's like a week and a half away. If any of the teams have any problems or want to talk to me about their project, I'm available. Please let me know. If you have any questions about the report or individual reflection, let me know. The information about that is on the website. For people who are doing individual projects, I'll be in touch with you to schedule a time for a presentation. Probably be sometime after the 8th. I'll probably only need a half an hour from people. But I just want to remind everybody that all the reports for individual and team presentations are due that Friday. On the 10th of March, there'll be a course evaluation. There'll be a class session, and I'll have an evaluation for people to fill out, and then we'll have a little celebration. So the big question is, burritos or pizza or a combination of both? I know this is a big decision, but I need to know, and I'll have a sign-up sheet for stuff next week about that. So think about that. Okay. Last time we talked a little bit about some of the symptoms of stroke, and here's a poster put out by the Peninsula Stroke Association, and you see the first symptom of a stroke is sudden difficulty talking or understanding words. But just because you have the symptom doesn't necessarily mean you're experiencing a stroke. It can be caused by other things, or just even nervousness. Okay. So I thought we'd do something a little bit different this time. Want to talk about humor a little bit, and sort of goes back to how people label each other in groups and things like that, and we talked about that. And when we talk about humor, it's always good to poke humor at yourself. So if you're talking about, things that I did, you know, that are funny, you know, everybody will laugh, and that's okay. But if it's difficult to make fun of another group of people, like Klingons, for example. You know, if I were to make fun of Klingons, you know, that people might have an issue with that. So it's always good to keep the humor within your own group. People that are quadriplegic or in wheelchairs are a group, and they're entitled to their own brand of humor. And this is the humor of John Callahan, who just died last year. Now, some of his... He was injured in an auto accident, and he has very little use of his hands and arms. So what he does is that he holds his pen with both hands, and he doesn't use his hands to draw or his arms. He uses his shoulders, so he just pushes his upper body around, and that pushes the pen around, and he's able to draw things. And he's actually done a lot of stuff and did some movies and cartoons, and he had some programs on TV as well. So this is his humor. Some of it's a pretty straight, but some of it's pretty sick or crazy or whatever. So I apologize
for him for offending you. I guess I should apologize for myself for presenting it, but I think we'll be okay.
So, you know, there's the typical things.
I guess they don't have to
describe it to anybody who has low vision, so.
So that's pretty
normal. Just how long has Dr. Wolk been teaching anyway, so?
Okay.
Let's see the. So it says, finish your vegetables. There are children in Beverly Hills with eating disorders. So the book says, book is Putting Out a Fire. I Won't Be Needing a Bag. He's obviously got a different sense of humor. So this says, unacceptable raving street nut. And this says, acceptable raving street nut. And the only difference is he has a handset in his hand. This is a bad one. This one says, don't you love it when they're still warm from the dryer? Oh my God, I forgot to get an education. Okay, well, if you're Jesus, you know, instead of walking on water, why not skateboard on water, you know? Oh, got the door. Come on in.
Coming in. Oh, thank you.
Oh.
Are you holding it?
That's being right. Held.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. So here's a priest or religious person. He's obviously, you know, curing all these people with disabilities, plus this guy at the end who's just badly dressed. Global warming, a silly myth. Now let's get ready for the rapture. Death by hair dryer. He has a thing with snowmen. That's pretty sick.
You know, but he's entitled to do this stuff because, you know.
Okay, that one's pretty innocuous. Blind Santa Claus. And blind Superman with the guide dog. And so if you're a tagger and you happen to be blind, you use a spray can and you tag in Braille. Guide penguin. The Mento Chorus Christmas Choir. Do you hear what I hear? We'll refrain from shaking hands with you for $5. So these are real hooks. Sorry, Mike, you just can't hold your liquor. Okay, these are a bunch of guys, quadriplegics with respirators and wheelchairs, going through an exercise section. Let's get those eyeballs moving. So here's a bunch of aliens with three legs, and there's one that has, you know, one leg amputeed. So he's obviously disabled and asking for money. This is a bad one. Here's another fine mess you've gotten us into, and they're in the AIDS ward. Okay, which one is Oliver? Which one is Stanley? Who knows? Don't know. That's right. You only know that because you
get old.
Yeah, right. I'm with you. You're too screwed up. Next patient, please. Sliding down the trapdoor, psychiatrist's office. This one says, "Sorry, Bill. We'll try to get a ramp for those stairs before our next dinner party. Need more potatoes?" Don't be a fool, Billy. Pretty sick, right? This is pretty bad. People like you are a real inspiration to me. So this is the guy talking, and he's talking to this other guy who has a patch over one eye. That's pretty sick. I like this one. "This town ain't accessible enough for both of us." And this one is my all-time favorite, and it's going to be your favorite too. "Don't worry, he won't get far on foot." Okay, so Tuesday we're having a tour of the VA spinal cord injury, and I should promote the tour a little bit. The VA, as you know, is a nationwide healthcare system that treats veterans, and there's around 30 million veterans, so it's a very big hospital system, and it's paid for by you, taxpayers. The Palo Alto VA is one of the larger ones, and it has all the extra features. It has all sorts of research facilities and geriatric care facilities. They're putting in a new brain injury clinic, and there's some other new construction going there, a psychiatric clinic as well. And the Palo Alto facility, I don't know if it still is, but it was the facility that had the most research funding of any VA facility in the country. That's where we had worked there in the Rehab Research and Development Center for many years. But we'll be going to the Spinal Cord Injury Center, and Dr. Creasy is the chief of the service. So they take veterans with spinal cord injuries, and they go through rehab with them, get them medically stable. They go through a number of weeks of rehab with them. There's therapy clinics there, all sorts of people helping them, occupational therapists, physical therapists. There's several computer labs there. And when we're there, it's going to be later in the day, so we probably won't see any patients or anything really going on. So we'll have the run of the place. And Dr. Creasy is a world-renowned physician, an expert in the field, and he's been doing these tours with us for the past 3 years. And last year, this tour was the highest-rated tour class session for the class, so it'd be well worth it for you to attend. And we can invite others as well. Just let me know. I think we'll be able to accommodate everybody. So we'll see. In addition to having a presentation by Dr. Creasy, we'll see the clinical area there, and we'll also see get a demo of the driving simulator. This is something I worked on when I was there. The driving simulator was purchased to assess people with brain injury, assess their driving ability after brain injury. So hope there should be time for a demo, and maybe some people can give it a shot. It's pretty interesting. So here's the sign up for carpooling. If you're a driver, you sign up here, and if you're a passenger, you can sign in with a particular driver. And underneath here, there's maps of how to get there, and it's sort of a duplication of this. And as I mentioned last time, you just go down Unibrosera to past Page Mill to Hillview, make a left turn, and then a right turn, and make a left turn into the medical center, and proceed to this parking lot, and where there's an entrance right here, and we'll be just on the room inside the building right here. It's room E111. We'll convene there. It's a large building, and then Dr. Creasy will give us a presentation and walk us through the facility. Any questions? So this is my cue to start the other presentation. Voila. So today's presenters are from Rota, Chris and Michael Bain. Chris was educated at the University of London in material science. He has over 30 years of experience designing, building, and selling equipment for the semiconductor and other high-tech industries. Prior to forming two of his own companies, Chris had a distinguished international career with Hararis. Is that right?
Hararis.
Okay. In London, in the early 1980s, he was transferred to the Silicon Valley to direct North American operations, and Chris held positions in both executive positions in sales and technical marketing. And Chris is also the founder and president of two companies, Diamond Semiconductor Systems and Sales Management Innovations, in addition to his work with Rota. And Michael is his son, and who has earned both graduate and undergraduate degrees in engineering and business. And Michael's experience includes positions at Apple, at Tencor, and at an IC production facility specifying design criteria for semiconductor and biomedical capital equipment and administering sales for and support systems. So without further ado, let's give a warm welcome to Chris. Let me mic you up. So put this in your pocket.
Hello?
Yeah, we're just recording. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much, David, for inviting us and for that very nice introduction. It's a privilege to be here. I gladly agreed to do this before I even knew what it was that we were letting ourselves in for. And we're also privileged in that we've got Stanford team Rota, who have, following our last presentation here, opted to help us with part of our work, specifically the power assist add-on to our product. So we're a local company. You can see where we're situated, actually in Los Gatos, California. Our production is under contract by a company in San Jose, and so we're not very far from you geographically, which really helps. These symbols represent our two products to date, and they're all predicated on a concept which we'll go into later, but something which is really quite near and dear to our hearts. So, that our motivation. After my cousin, Raymond, was diagnosed with MS, all the years in the semiconductor industry, and this is typical of the type of equipment that you would see in a fab, and this is Michael's background at Apple, this is the inside of an iPad, led us to realize that a lot of what we were doing might be commercially viable and so on, but it really wasn't as rewarding as we'd like it to have been. And This is a brain scan of somebody with MS, and you all know what the effects of that can be. And very soon, Raymond was in a wheelchair, and he was in that wheelchair a very long time, but ultimately he succumbed to repetitive strain injury. We'll go into that in greater detail, but the medical ramifications of RSI are very serious. So we started to look at what we could do with our experience as engineers in the semiconductor industry to reapply that technology to an area where it would be more beneficial and where there hadn't been that much innovation, in fact. The wheelchair with push rims has been in everyday use for well over 100 years now and is represented by that image on the left side. And then the ubiquitous electric scooter, which is a great tool, but provides no opportunity for exercise in the course of one's daily routine. And then the lightweight wheelchair, almost indispensable for people who need one and is part of their daily life, but is also one of the major causes of repetitive strain injury because our bodies are just not built for doing this properly. And then there's this type of equipment. Superb to ride. I don't know if you've ever tried it. It's really quite hard work. The turning radius could be 10 or 20 feet, so it's not very practical inside. It's only practical outside. Difficult to transport and transport, of course. Can actually add to the RSI problem. Price can be very significant. This is an interesting way of looking at it, but makes the wheelchair even more handicapped looking when there's, you know, it's not cool. But one is a pawpaw, it's a power add-on with a battery motor in the wheels, and this is a lever system, but they increase the width of the chair, they're heavy, they're not useful all the time, and of course they're not cheap either. So this particular product is moderately successful in the market, but is not the total solution in our opinion. We were looking for an equipment or an apparatus such as under the cover of these sheets here, which would enable somebody in the course of their daily lives to go to any one of these places, including the restroom, to and from home, etc. So here's a chart which shows how healthy things are and how good the utility is. And this is where we targeted our position in the market to be. We wanted to be both healthy and provide great utility. So our analysis of the market. I'll hand over to Michael here.
As Chris mentioned, we wanted to find the best product for our family member. So we looked through all the devices that were on the market, as Chris mentioned. And when we went through that, we have a huge spreadsheet now of all the products on the market, and we did a weighted analysis of all the features of those products on the market. So in going into a new industry, we really needed to educate ourselves and document that which we found out. And so this spreadsheet goes on and on and on, and having developed rides today, at the end of that spreadsheet are our rides, and when we added up the total score, a bit biased, but we did very well. The other thing that we looked at was, if this is a business that we want to enter, what's the size of the market? And the numbers are staggering. Just in the U.S., there's 2.7 million manual wheelchair riders. From a dollar standpoint and population standpoint, those markets are growing rapidly. It's the baby boomer generation now that's retiring and getting old and getting all the subsidy from the systems. I believe you got an email just last week, right?
Yes. Yeah. I'm on the Medicare roll now.
So that's just a result of why this industry is very appealing to a lot of people right now. We talked about the VA. 30% of all wheelchairs go to the VA. They're funded very well right now, global affairs as they are. So the market was very attractive, so we kept them going. The other thing that was attractive is that wheelchair riders replace their vehicles every 3 to 5 years. They do that as a result of just the mean time between failure, as well as the fact that they're eligible for subsidy every 3 to 5 years. So if they are proactive, they'll be getting a new vehicle under taxpayer dollars. And then resource for data. In terms of calculating your total addressable market, units sold, and such, the VA has all of those statistics documented. As well, since they're Medicare and Medicaid receipts, you can find those. So if you want to articulate exactly which sections of the market you're going to, or which sections of the market are most valuable from a business standpoint, all the data's there. And when we looked at the market, we looked at all of the different categories that we thought would apply to the vehicle that we were creating. So then we found out the unit sales. We talked to practitioners and also thought ourselves what would be reasonable numbers of how much each of those groups we could address. Because in each group, you have a lot of varying different ability levels. And we looked at the prices and everything, trying to find a sweet spot of the market to enter. So we did all of this really before designing a vehicle. I think this is a key contributor to our success. When you look at the market for products within the durable medical equipment category, this is the composition. You can see that a terrific amount of people get their vehicles from Medicare or Medicaid or private insurance. But there's also a really large group, 8% of 2.7 million people is a big group that pay cash. And then you have your commercial institutions like the VA. So we said, how do you buy these vehicles in these different categories? This slide is a burden to read, but more importantly, it's a burden to the customer. They have to go through this whole process before a vehicle is prescribed to them. And then it takes another, maybe 3 to 5 months for that vehicle to be built for them and delivered. So, this process shows you have to go to the doctor, you get medical justification, your insurance has to approve it, and then you have to submit all these documents back to your doctor and say, right, this is what I want, this is what I need. And so when we looked at the market, that was a bit scary, but it's the truth. And so coming into this space, these are things that we needed to look at. The market, if you go through discretionary income or real cash sales, it's still quite difficult. You have to go for a fitting, get an order form, go to the dealer, and the dealer has to take your cash, and then they go to the manufacturer and say, look, I've got the cash, I want to buy this. And it takes 2 to 4 months to go through that process, even if you have cash in. And then it takes another 2 to 3 months for that manufacturer to build the vehicle. So the simple act of saying, I need a wheelchair, I want to buy a wheelchair, it's a difficult experience. And that doesn't go just for the wheelchair. If you're riding in a wheelchair and your tire's flat or your shock absorber broke, you have to go through all of these cycles all over again. So we saw, just in the global picture, an opportunity to create a disruptive technology, but also a disruptive service in terms of how we're going to look at our customers. When you look at what you need to do in terms of a business model to reach these different groups, if you look all the way at the end, Medicare and Medicaid, the dealer takes 50% right off the top of the selling price of the vehicle. So if you're creating a business and you have to give 50% of your selling price right away, right at the very beginning, that's a tough market to get into. You need to purchase really high volumes to be able to address that market. So we looked at it in phases. We said if there's 8% of people that need wheelchairs and aren't paying cash, then that's how we're going to do our business. We're going to go to the VA next, and then we're going to look at the Medicare and Medicaid market. So phase one, we're going to do direct sales, online marketing. This is the fastest growing sector for a lot of reasons. There's an increase in population with discretionary income. Baby boomers are, spending their money on assistive devices. And then you've got, that frustration with the products that I showed. And then, you've got your doctors being more scrupulous about what they prescribe, so people get fed up, and they go out and buy products. So we saw the cash market as really attractive, and we went after it. The next phase for us is going to the private insurance and the commercial institutions. For that, you really need to have good clinical data, because you're not selling to the user now, you're selling to the practitioner. So in preparation for this market, we started a lot of clinical studies and clinical trials of our product. And then, what is the large market? And if you look at any investor on Sand Hill Road, they're going to want to see this side of the pie chart in the business plan as well. You have
Yeah, I wanted to reiterate what Michael said about the importance. This looks daunting, all this analysis of the market and understanding it, but believe me, it's so important. So one of the things we wanted to contribute, if anything, today was the idea that if you guys become entrepreneurs, inventors, don't be daunted by the whole process of understanding the opportunity. But on the other hand, don't develop something that nobody wants. Because lots of people do that, you know, and they never see the light of day, those developments. So it's arduous, yes, there's a lot of help out there for you, but do take that advice. Analyze what you're going to do before you do it. So the moral of that, the message of that story was, I don't know if anybody knows this name, Benzing. He's pretty famous in the Valley, one of the founders of Applied Materials, and Jeff Benzing, the son of one of the founders, was recently head of Novellus. And he said, if you don't have a process, you don't have a business. By that he meant, if you don't have something which is really beneficial technologically, and you can prove that process, it's not good enough just to have a good gadget. You have to have a solution to a problem. So in this case, we wanted to develop a great product, but one which would have a great clinical benefit. Michael told you earlier that the whole business of supplying medical equipment through the DME, the Durable Medical Equipment Supply Chain, is fraught with all kinds of problems. And there's no incentive there for innovation. But when we looked at what was necessary, we took these four main factors into consideration. How easy was it to transfer to and from? How easy was it to run on the flat, on the uphill, and on the downhill? Those are the four main areas that we focused on. And this is why. Never designed to be self-propelled. The arm isn't built for pushing. We're primates. It's built for pulling mainly. So the musculature and the joints in the shoulder suffer terribly because this particular motion is so unnatural. A hand-rim propulsion, whilst it's very useful, go up. Is incredibly hard work. You get a one-to-one mechanical advantage with very low friction. It's a very simple mechanism. That's good, but no mechanical advantage. And it ends up being harmful to the user. Even though it's extremely useful, and you must conserve or preserve the ability to use your push rims if you're in a wheelchair for those occasions when it's absolutely necessary to have that kind of mobility in a very confined space. So 70% of all push rim users will eventually report pain as a consequence of overuse. It manifests itself in this breakdown. And the only remedy is resorting to the use of a power chair and painkillers most often. However, at Rancho Los Amigos in Downey, California, Dr. Mulroy's group is heading up an intervention program now which, based upon the rowing motion, is actually reversing the effects of RSI, and demonstrably so in a very large group that she has there. They've got well funded for this, and that's because it's a very serious problem. So basically what they're doing is developing balanced musculature on either side of the skeletal structure, which will reconnect the ball and cup joint of the shoulder and stop this impingement on the contact surfaces at the edge of the ball. So that's very good. So cardiovascular health is essential. We know that now from Dr. Nash down at Miami, Florida. He did a fantastic big study to prove how beneficial hand cycling was. Even though it's not very practical in everyday use, it's a tremendous exercise for people. Individual freedom and wellness, psychological and physiological wellness, was part of our goal. And to use lever propulsion, because 20 and 30 years ago, Dr. Vorda in Amsterdam was publishing a lot of papers on the mechanical advantage and the biomechanical efficiency of having lever propulsion. Front and center is very important because with our mechanism developed based upon all this great input that we had, so freely available from the academic world, told us that if you could keep the arms close together and not far apart, you can just almost feel it. If you sit there in your chair and do this, you can feel the strain across your shoulder. It's called non-sagittal plane force. Whereas if the arms are together, this is optimal. And steering is really important. So front and center steering, rather like a bicycle, stops you having to use one arm with peak strain forces approximately 1.5 times to 2 times the effort on one side to the other to compensate for a camber as you go down the road. So being able to steer takes all your muscle power into propulsion and not into just keeping your vehicle straight. Giving the type of mechanism we developed, we were able to convert this reciprocal back and forth motion into unidirectional rotary output, which immediately lent itself to the use of a hub gear from a bicycle. So now these vehicles have 8-speed gears. So very easy to go uphill, and when you get an opportunity, you can go 10, 15 miles an hour. Now, this look and feeling cool, as you can see from our spokes model here, I mean, she's got a fabulous looking wheelchair. Ours is not there yet. We'd like it to look as fancy as this, but having a very orthopedic looking chair is not much fun. And everybody tries to trick them out. I don't know if you've seen Molly's chair here. Not shy, right? So, and designed to meet existing codes, there's a lot of restrictions, a lot of government protocols to conform to, and regulatory affairs that come to bear. So you need to know that too if you're entering this market. Next slide. So once we discovered what the most important attributes of a propulsion system need to be, then we had to set about how do we make this motion into this motion. It seems relatively simple now, but a friend of mine, Barker at Intel, and I dreamed this up one day. It's a series of free wheels where the left-hand one has a right-hand free wheel and the right-hand one has a left-hand free wheel. And when you go forward, one turns one way, and when you go back, one turns the other way. The net result is you get unidirectional rotary output. But you can see it has a hub gear in there, but it was real klutzy, and we lost a lot of energy in our mechanism. So we did the mechanics. As you can see, we came out with the formula that we were looking for. Next slide, please. And we went through a lot of different devices to employ this mechanism until we found one that really did it well. That was this. So the so-called Barker drive, after my friend Steve Barker at Intel, has now morphed into a transmission system inside of which looks like this. It's a series of gears and clutches which work in harmony together. So we've now got a fully enclosed drivetrain, which is compatible with indoor use, that transmits a very high percentage of the input power on both the push and, most importantly, the pull. Because it's that, if you remember from Dr. Mulroy's work, which is so important towards reversing the effects of RSI. And, by the way, it's highly efficient biomechanically. Next slide, please. So, this is where I hand over to you again, Michael.
So this is what it ended up.
Sorry about my bag.
Change it on the shifter here. It folds down to go into the car. The wheels come off just like check. So this is the same lever propulsion. This is disengaged now. If we engage, the drive, both hold and push, the vehicle goes forward. And the front center steering allows the vehicle to turn. So with a lot of innovation going into these products, and this is the culmination of it. These are the pre-production units. We're actually in production right now. So how do we kind of categorize them from a marketing standpoint? Roadshare, we like to say it's the most advanced manual wheelchair out there. If you told somebody to design a wheelchair today, they'd probably say, well, make it super light, make it out of titanium. But that doesn't solve the core issues involved in a wheelchair. Not to mention, titanium is now not accepted by Medicare and Medicaid for subsidy. So the common belief of what you need to do is sometimes not the right idea. We market Rotrain as the ultimate crossover wheelchair, kind of taking terms from the auto industry crossover. And that is a little bit, it's not really well accepted in the Medicare industry, because there are specific wording in the contracts for assistive devices that they only should be used in the home if they're eligible for subsidy. So we did something a little bit different with this device. The fact that it goes 10 to 15 miles an hour obviously means you're not going to use it inside your home. But we really looked at it from a user standpoint. And if we're going after this cash market first, they're really active people that want to have a bit of fun. So we designed this to attract to them. But then we also have and then here at Stanford in the design department, we talk about a lot about human-centered design. We think that these are the first wheelchairs that are not harmful to their users. And that's a big claim, but we really believe it. It took a lot of out-of-the-box thinking to design something inside this box. Powertrain, the seat, the steering, the brakes, everything is inside that box. That box is narrower than the traditional wheelchair. Because we're driving from the wheel bus, we don't have wheels that obstruct transfer getting in and out of the vehicle. We think it looks really cool, and it works for a lot of people. For spinal cord injury people, or people that are stroke victims, or they're hemiplegic, meaning they have strength on one side, and they don't have it on the other. Front and center propulsion as well as steering is great, because they can have one hand after the sleigh and the other is active. So it works really well. So when we go back to the design criteria that we had at the very beginning, we have a vehicle that's easy to transfer. It doesn't have peak strain forces moving over the wheels. We have a vehicle that on the flat does very well. The truth is that you're never really on a very flat surface, either stopping or being in the end of the road. Again, front and center is great because you can propel yourself and steer at the same time, rather than a traditional wheelchair where you go like this at one point, then this and the other, just to keep going straight. When you're going uphill, we have gearing, which Chris mentioned, and that's another important aspect in that you never know the strength of the person getting in the vehicle. So some people might use gears 1, 2, and 3 all the time, or other people might use gears 1 all the way through 8. So gearing makes the device accessible, it also makes it perform well. And then going downhill, bicycle-style steering is great. You're not burning up your hands when you go downhill. It's great. Wheelchairs don't have any active brakes, they have parking brakes. So what's great is you can go downhill really fast, turn, all at the same time. So it makes using the vehicle a lot of fun. And then, because we're going down the street at 10 to 15 miles an hour, we're being able to be used indoors, we can also put these vehicles in the car. Weight's an important issue. The vehicles, collapse in modules, you can take the seat off, fold the lever underneath, take the wheels off. All the wheels are quick release from the bicycle industry. So really what you have is a device that performs very much similar to a wheelchair, very much similar to a scooter, and you can also put it in the car. No scooter can put in the car. You have to adapt your vehicle to get your scooter or power chair into the car. And by the way, the notion of adapting that car is not covered by any insurance. So this was very important. So our disruptive efforts, you want to talk about some of these, Chris?
Well, yes. I think this is your slide, still.
Well, again, as we designed the product, we wanted to design it in such a way that we could could offer it to the customer. When you go for a traditional wheelchair, you go through a dealer who takes all the different measurements of you, and then they put that all on a long list. If you look at Sideway, Color, Linger Hair, or Quickie, they have about a 5-page measurement list for the wheelchair itself. And then, the reason it takes so long to build them is because every frame is custom. So every wheelchair is custom in the traditional model. We went to more of the bicycle industry model, where you have standard frame sizes, but adjustability, like seat posts or bottom brackets, bicycles or headstems. We've got that same functionality on us. So people can go online, buy their wheelchair, and adjust it to fit them. So what does that mean? You can order your wheelchair online. We'll ship it to either your home, your rehab center, or your bicycle shop. We do that in 2 or 3 weeks.
So no company really can supply one size fits all solution. It's just not out there. We realize that, but no one company has all of the market anyway. So we divided the market up into sectors which we could address, and we said we're going to have a universal fit solution, because then suddenly we've got a standardization. And coming from an industry where standardization is a prerequisite, it was an anathema to me to see that everybody was having this special measurement. And I thought, why are they doing that? What's the real difference between one wheelchair and another? They're different frame widths, and then they're set up differently. So there was a mystique surrounding this whole business of supplying a wheelchair to somebody. Then I realized that's how they justified this huge sales and distribution margin. So I'll take the hit for that suggestion, Michael, in telling you that not only do you need disruptive technology, you need disruptive marketing. Because to break into a business that's been monopolized by 5 or 6 companies for a very long time takes something different. Now, the bicycle industry sets up a tremendous model, as Michael mentioned, for us, but you have to have standardization in order to play in that space. We've done that. Now we can only serve about 70% of the addressable market, but that's a large proportion. So we'll take it, and we're going to address the market directly, distributing through cycle shops, not through the DME.
Yeah, so as you can see, when we look at the slides before, they show a very long sales process. We have the opportunity now where we meet somebody on the road and say, try it out, and they can have their wheelchair in a few weeks. And I think that's a real big deal. And for service, we partnered with bicycle shops in the Bay Area, and they are really eager to have people come in. We use bicycle parts on all of these. We've got Schwalbe tires, we've got disc brakes. Anything that is a consumable item can be replaced by a bicycle. We don't need to go back through to the dealer process and wait months just to get your tire fixed. Bike shops are full of great people. They stock the product that you need already. And they're much cheaper than the dealer. And what we found was wheelchair riders already go to bike stores.
I think this is one you slated me to present, right? So, yes, we filed our patent back in 2006. We've added subordinate claims, and we've extended the filing to cover other parts of the world. We got a very good simple patent, which is predicated on the propulsion device itself. I mean, a lot of the aspects of the chair, the disc brakes, the steering, the suspension, all of that is not patentable. It's already done, right? So we buy that. So we've teamed up with a company, New World Machining in San Jose, that we've been using for our semiconductor equipment for many years. And they're doing a spectacularly good job of helping us get the cost of machined parts down to the lowest possible number in California. Obviously, we can do better in China in terms of price, but we're not willing to risk the IP or the quality issues. So at the moment, we're here, still making them here, and I'd like to keep it that way. Optimized sourcing and componentry. Well, Michael and I have made trips to Taiwan. You can't beat buying wheels and brakes and tires and hubs in Taiwan. There's a market there. I think they're serving 100 million units a year. So they've got the economies of scale, which we badly need in order to get our costs down. we're actually going to start shipping units. We've taken orders, our online store is up and running, so if you know anybody that wants one, please tell them to order one. It would be much appreciated. This is a very important slide for us. We've gone out of our way to engage the help of others, and I'll go on record as saying that the people we've spoken to, every one of them has helped us. And I didn't find that in 40 years in the semiconductor industry, I can promise you. What's different? It's because you're helping somebody, and that's really a great feeling. So here the VA, we've actually filed for an SBIR grant from the National Institute of Health in conjunction with the VA at their HERL labs in Pittsburgh so that they can do the pathokinesiology testing to demonstrate the biomechanical efficiency, to bring that message from the academic community to the medical community and through them to the occupational therapists to the customer. So we want that route for the message to reach our ridership. Rancho Los Amigos, Dr. Jacqueline Perry developed what they call fine wire EMG. She puts electrodes in the muscle groups of the shoulders, and she could tell which shoulders are firing, what the sugars are. She can really tell us what's going on when people are rowing as opposed to using their push rims. Stanford, well, Team Stanford, we've got some great help, thanks to David. University of Groningen, Dr. Lucas van der Voorde has a treadmill which is huge, and he can angle it this way and tilt it this way all at the same time. So they're going to do the biomechanical efficiency testing for us starting in June. We're going to be there with these products, and they're going to hook the riders up, a whole series of them, with an oxygen respirator to measure the carbon dioxide production and the energy consumption and the power output. They really have got that down as a science. So we'll know, absolutely no doubt, how our vehicles compare with others that they've tested in the past. University of Buffalo is an interesting one. We wanted to know if it was quantifiable, helped by the VA, to determine what the benefits were to the healthcare industry, because this is a business. It might feel good as an altruistic thing to do, but it's really a business. And you need a financial driver for any business, and the insurance companies are always looking for ways to save money. Kaiser, whom we're with, they are preaching, you know, their Thrive symbol is to, you know, to promote the fact that prevention is cheaper than cure. So if you can get your ridership happier, healthier, you're going to be less expensive to maintain. That's what they're... And so the University of Buffalo are looking into the benefits of gaining exercise through using a rowing mechanism in the course of everyday life to make our ridership fitter than the average wheelchair ridership. And what will that save the healthcare industry? In the hopes that the healthcare industry will reciprocate and try and promote our product, right? And this is Georgia Tech. Dr. Steven Spiegel there is a world... Spiegel, thank you. Spriggle, is it? Yes, I haven't met him yet, but yeah, thank you. He's a character, yeah. He's a specialist in the human mechanical interface, the ergonomics of wheelchair propulsion and so on. So we're going to be talking to him at length. I think that covers that slide.
So again, we're doing all of those studies with those different groups at the right stages. We enter phase one, we're doing the firms that have very little incentive to innovate. that standard hospital-style wheelchair, Invacare will lease that out for $50 a month to a patient for, you know, a whole year. And that lease money is, you know, incredibly more than it cost to build that thing in the first place. So what's happening is there's being more and more realization by the government and different institutions that these lobbied subsidy prices are too high. And the manufacturers and dealers in this country are kind of hiding behind a brick wall, a bit worried that people are now looking at those prices and that subsidy. And it gives us an opportunity to innovate, because what's happening is subsidy for vehicles such as these high-end ultralight wheelchairs is going down. For powered devices, it's going down. And the lawmakers are increasing the subsidy for, you know, low-cost products that are not very good. So there's a lot of things going on, especially for complex rehab, things that are designed specifically for users that need a really sophisticated device. The subsidy has been completely eliminated for those devices. So there's a lot of opportunity in the market, but you got to pick the right sectors to look at. So if you look at what the dealers are doing now, they're providing products with the greatest margins. They're not providing products with the greatest benefit to the user. They're rationing their sales and service, so the bike stores come even more into play in our business model because they give great service. They're demanding manufacturers to reduce their prices. So everything that you see on the market for assistive devices is being offshored, and the quality coming back is not very good. And then the other thing that's very interesting and that appeals to our business is that they're trying out retail sales. Because they're not getting so much subsidy for the government now, the dealers, they're putting in high-end products on their sales floor to increase their revenues. That's a big opportunity for us. If you look at the manufacturers, like Invacare or Quickie or the others in the wheelchair industry, they're focusing on cost reduction measures. You look at all their filings for their financial reports, and it's outsourcing of their manufacturing, getting their cost of goods down. They're distilling their product portfolios, less products, not spending much on R&D. And they're actually, the big strategic thing they're doing is they're buying all the sales and service centers. So they're trying to vertically consolidate in their industry to own the whole sales channel. Because they don't know where the profitability is necessarily, but if they own the whole sales channel, they can own all that. So the big money is being spent on buying the dealers and providing those dealers exclusive contracts. So there's not too much democratized design in the assistive technology space because those sales channels get involved. So it requires a radically different approach if you're going to get in. So we're innovating real value, we feel. Better products, better prices, better service. And one of the things that we're doing is we're telling people why they're better. And with all the studies that we talked about, we're measuring the reduction in painkillers, reduce number of reconstructive surgeries as a result of using our chairs versus manual wheelchairs, the health benefits, and the increased mobility. So when we try and sell our products against those that are in the space to customers, to dealers, to, you know, prospective manufacturing partners, we're providing them clear and real data about why our products are better. Quite honestly, it's not really the people in the assistive technology space that we're appealing to. It's the insurers, because that's where the money is in this industry. If you can tell Kaiser that you're saving their patients money as a result of providing them better products, they'll listen. And that's how you'll sell your devices. So one of the things we believe is there's not too much value in trying to reduce your cost of goods, trying to provide, you know, substandard products. We're really trying to provide the best products we can, tell people that the best products with evidence, and then going to where the real money is in the industry, and that's the insurance. Because if you have these big people behind you, you're going to do it very well. So we think it's a good space. Just to summarize it, a lot of text, but baby boomers, they're reaching retirement. That makes the market really great. Everybody says it, but it is really true. It's really coming into play now. Competitive bidding, that's when
And we wanted to, I don't want to, you know, all that information about the marketing was really just to demonstrate how thorough you have to be. You know, you just can't go out and do something that you think is cool and is likely to be beneficial. You have to be sure. So, you know, that was a long presentation. Well done, Michael. But don't let it bother you. Just know that you have to do it and ask for help to get it done. Because if you're an entrepreneur and you don't do this, you're going to fail. You've just got to dig in and dig deep. So our intent is to bring these products to market as inexpensively as possible, to provide power, to provide steering, braking, suspension, all those features and benefits that a standard wheelchair doesn't have, but less than the end user price. That's what we're going to try and do.
And then again, I think it's worth coming to the last presentation of this class, because this product is going to be a power assist device. So users who need an extra boost to go up a hill, or if they spent a long day in the device, so you're going to see a module. The market's going to see that. That really makes a very expensive device. So I encourage you to come see. That's pretty much it. Decisive in which way they go, but I think that's the reason why you have to complete argument, as we know that this is a product that is certified by the standards in the industry. It has clinical benefit. It's a product that you can try out. You know, if you're having a custom-built wheelchair, you won't have the opportunity to try it out. You have to place your order before you even see it. So there's a lot of factors that go into dispelling the traditional preconceived notions of the industry.
So the next question you sort of brought it up, what's your strategy for making this product visible? You say you have it on the internet, but I mean, people need to see these and experience it before they're willing to buy it.
Yeah, I mean, the notion that it is a recreational product, or a product I think is a benefit from that degree. When we go to the US, it's good to see products. We get riders moving around the trade show floor. We just have them ride around. The speed of the trade show is kind of like this, and we're going around like that. And if somebody says, oh, that looks kind of cool, we stop by them. We say, get in, try it out. And that's just completely different to the industry at large. And then we also, you know, we're trying to be like the Zappos of the wheelchair industry. Order it online. We'll deliver it to your local bike store. Try it out in that store. If you don't like it, return it to us. So we're trying to make that ability to have a little bit of a tire kick or everything much easier for the user.
That brings up the third question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are there other options other than buying it? Is there considered options for renting it or leasing it or short-term lease or things like that? Because in my mind, products that are really expensive, it's hard to justify, laying out all that money for, especially if you're going to use it over a long time. You don't do that for a car. You've got a loan. Is there a similar type of...
I put 2 points to that. Cash sales are so important to us now because that is financing us going forward. I mean, when you look at, when the iPhone came out, it was something like $600, and then, 3 weeks later, it turned into, to $300, Each sale right now, profitability on each of those sales, that's why we've done so much in the supply chain, is critically important to the business. So we need to have the belief and the help of our customers as we go forward. But
we have considered it, David, And our VP of financing will probably be able to address that, but it's all about money. And so if we can finance it and, it makes good sense and really helps people, why not?
Any questions?
So what is the price point?
$49.80, thank you.
So the price of the high-end bike, and as we produce in the volumes, you know, accustomed to the bicycle industry, we'll see the price drop to the levels that one's associated with the bicycle industry.
It's economies of scale, that's the problem. Without the volume, you can't get the price down.
Gary? Are there any local trade shows coming up?
Yes, there are a number. The biggest is the Abilities Expo in LA, and that's coming here in November. There are lots of smaller events which we exhibit at, and we're actually appointing riders now to take our demo units around to various different places, yes. We're going to be advertising. We're talking to people that can get us TV coverage on the local and hopefully the syndicated networks. It's all been done before in this industry. We've just got to learn how to do it.
John.
What's the warranty? Is there a warranty?
Yes, of course. We have to give a one-year unconditional warranty apart from normal wear and tear. And there's a lifetime warranty on the powertrain because we've been able to spec that out accordingly. Yes.
People that, you know, really exercise a lot, but they damage their ankle or their knee or actually RSI computer people. I mean,
yes.
It's actually really good
for that. Yes, thank you for that idea. Of course, we would be delighted if we could attract a broader market appeal. And our first customer actually was somebody with arthritis. She can walk, but not very easily and with a lot of pain, of course. And so she uses it, she will use it, excuse me, she's only just ordered, but her plan is to use it in the workspace. So I don't know if she'll use it to get to and from work because she puts a regular wheelchair in the car. But once she's at work, she'll probably use it all day long. And it's a big building. And so she's going to sit in it during the working day. She has a very nice cushion of her own. And she better get around in the building, and it'll extend her working life. She's 67 now. They wanted to lay her off, but because she's invalid, she enjoys some privilege or protection there, and she's trying to extend her working life as much as possible. So she's thrilled to get this. Yes, I don't know how detailed the Buffalo study will be in phase one, but generally speaking, we ask them to make a sort of global estimate of what the potential healthcare cost to the healthcare industry might be through having an overall increase in well-being and fitness for the ridership. Because if you can get good, non-injurious exercise in the course of your daily routine, you don't have to take time out of your busy schedule to go to the gym or whatever it is you normally do for exercise. This way, you get exercise just as I do walking around. But as a wheelchair person, you don't get that. This will provide that. And if it does result in improved health, we hope to demonstrate a general reduction in cost. But being so specific might take a long time, you know, and data capture.
Rather than wait for a year to recover the factory. So
not only benefiting all ages, but the fact that I'm seeing this type of vehicle around senior community developments instead of the golf carts. Again, it's that use. What my legs used to do, my arms are now doing.
And then as you age, you still have the capability to develop muscle.
Yeah.
It's not something that goes away. So, if you can do that, that's very good.
I have a question, a prosaic question. It's kind of a solid tire.
These are Schwalbe tires, and they have a puncture guard protection layer inside them. What would you like to see? Kind of a solid tire.
One last question.
What are some of the performance differences between the two shares, the track versus the traditional?
Right, so we anticipate this to be maybe for MS riders or individuals that want to use it indoors. I mean, we have to market it that way, as we mentioned with them. So the gearing is much easier on this device. So it's designed to go walking speed, where this is designed to go running speed. If you look at it that way, this is the walking shoe, this is the running shoe. That's kind of how we make the analogy on that.
The transmission is the same apart from that one factor. The differential in the rear is 2-1 in this and 1-1 in that.
That's why that has a lot of rear lace.
I think we'll cut the class session here, but they're going to have these devices around and outside, and so you can have a demo. You can try it out outside, and I think that'll be great. So let's thank them once again. And I hope to see you all on Tuesday at the VA for the tour. Thanks again.
Thank you, everybody.